You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Kate Archer Kent. Coming up, Camp Randall Stadium turns 100 years old this year. We'll talk with UW legend Pat Richter about his favorite moments in the stadium.
First, it's time for our weekly review of state news. Public hearings on the proposed state budget kicked off this week, and education funding was a major concern for citizens who attended a session at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville campus.
And speaking of education, State Superintendent Tony Evers easily won another term this week, but he wasn't the only big winner on the ballot. A majority of referendums on school spending were supported by voters to the tune of $700 million. We'll find out more about what voters could be getting for their money.
We'll also find out about a trade dispute that has major implications for Wisconsin farmers. And we'll also talk about who Milwaukee County voters elected to sit on the judicial bench there. Robert Menser joins us now, as he does just about every Friday, to look at the week's top news. He's a storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. Hey, Rob.
Hi, Judith.
Good to talk with you.
Hey, it's good to be back.
So let's start with the agriculture story. We learned this week that dozens of Wisconsin dairy farmers are scrambling to find buyers for their milk due to a trade dispute with Canada. So what's going on there, Rob?
Trade disputes are very hot right now as President Trump meets with Chinese officials, but you don't expect your trade disputes to come from Canada, but this one does. So, the details of this are arcane, as trade disputes tend to be, but basically Canada has decided to add a bunch of fees to imports of a particular specialized dairy product called ultra-filtered milk, which is used to make cheese. Canada had been importing it duty-free, and now they're slapping additional fees. Canada's view, of course, is that they are acting within current trade rules, that the rules weren't being enforced before, and they're just trying to protect Canadian farmers. But this is serious business to Wisconsin dairy farmers. This in itself is not a new dispute. This didn't just begin happening. But what happened this week was the large supplier, Grassland Dairy Products of Greenwood, which is a big buyer of Wisconsin milk, told about 75 farms that as of May 1st, if nothing changes, Greenwood will no longer buy their milk. Right now there is an oversupply of milk in the market, so a lot of these farms are really at risk of shutting down. There are not a lot of buyers out there, and so they're put in a very tough spot.
So they're told on, it sounds like, pretty short notice, we might not be buying your milk anymore. It's a market that is already glutted with milk products. So what options might there be for these farmers?
Well, this is something that has been going on. Governor Scott Walker has written letters to President Barack Obama and now to President Donald Trump about this issue. The one hope among dairy groups and advocates is that the U.S. government will, reach some sort of agreement with Canada, perhaps to lower these fees. The price of milk has been low. This is the flip side of there being an oversupply. And so milk already in a lot of cases is below profitable levels for Wisconsin farmers. Normally, these things should sort of be a bit cyclical. But of course, that's easy to say if it's not your family's business that is at risk of closing.
Well, let's move on to the first public hearings on the proposed state budget that took place this week. The first was at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, and citizens there really wanted to sound off on education funding. What specifically are they concerned about?
So the state legislators look like they're set to increase funding for K-12 education, and this was a major topic at this hearing. Platteville also is of course a university town. There's a University of Wisconsin campus there, and so that was another issue. And it's The K-12 issue is part of this larger, longer-term discussion, and that, you mentioned in the intro, the other thing that happened this week was voters approved 40 out of 65 local referendums about $700 million in local funding for schools. It's notable because the state legislature has limited the amount that school districts can increase taxes without going to referendum. Mm-hmm. And so the response, what has happened is there's been a large boom in these referendum votes, and most of them pass.
And is that surprising that in a time when people are, at least politicians say that people want, lower taxes and they don't want to pay into the infrastructure as much? Is it surprising that so many Wisconsin residents said, yes, we are willing to pony up extra for our local schools?
Yeah, it's a bit surprising, and it's just a bit of it feels a bit like a shell game in a sense, right? In a certain way of looking at it, what has happened on the state level, where there have been large cuts to K-12 in previous budget cycles, it puts a pressure on the locals. Some local officials will argue that it's the same thing as going on with transportation, when state aid to local governments is cut, then they're going to increase local taxes to fix potholes or whatever. And so it could say that it sort of wipes out, property tax decreases or other tax cuts that have been made on the state level for a lot of people. But of course, it's also a vote. It's a democracy. People, if the schools can organize and make the case that that's a good investment of taxpayer dollars, then the public will support it. Maybe just one thing to say, I saw the Verona area school district in suburban Madison passed a record referendum worth $181.3 million, and that got a lot of attention. But that's a growing district. Mm-hmm. That's in an affluent area. But the other thing that is we've seen a lot of, up here in north central Wisconsin, there was a Tomahawk referendum. There was Rochelt schools in Portage County, where they're really those referendums really are about basic operations costs. They're about keeping the lights on, and that doesn't seem like the way it ought to work.
As we wrap up on education, State Superintendent Tony Evers just won his third election as state superintendent, and with the largest margin to date for him. What might we expect from him as priorities as he starts this third term overseeing education in Wisconsin?
Well, Evers, my favorite thing about this story, Evers was called by the Wisconsin State Journal on election night. He was at his home playing euchre with his family. and he said, oh, I won. Oh, terrific. He is more on the liberal end of the political spectrum, though it's a nonpartisan office. And he has called for completely revamping the state's funding formula for K-12 schools. And, that is a heavy lift. There has been very little appetite among legislators to do that because it's just hard. It's just complicated and hard to do. There's bound to be winners and losers. But that's his perspective, is that the way that the state funds schools is inequitable.
We're talking with Robert Menser right now. He's a storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. We're taking our weekly look at the biggest news stories in the state. And so, Rob, another election note of interest is who Milwaukee County voters elected to sit on the judicial bench. Tell us what happened there.
Yes, in Oak Creek, the nation's second Hmong American judge was elected. Kashua Yang is also the first female Hmong judge in the country. She's 36, and like a lot of Hmong people, she came to the U.S. as a refugee from Laos. She was 6 years old when she immigrated, and her campaign. She told that story, sort of a classic immigrant story, American immigrant story. She worked her way through college and eventually went on to law school and practiced mostly sort of family law. And it's significant. This is a kind of a cool story and a significant story of for the Hmong community.
And Rob, you are in the Wausau area, and there was the tragedy, the mass shooting earlier in the month, or possibly late last month. Can you tell us how your community is processing that and recovering?
Sure. Yeah, so it's of course it's a long process. I mean, four people killed, including a police officer. The shooter himself died as well. And so there's a lot of grief and trauma. This week there was the last of four funerals of the shooting victims was held last night in the Wausau area. There was also a public event hosted by local police departments to sort of build as a community healing event, and the idea was to give people a somewhat of a broader perspective on what the traumas folks see. I think it's going to go on for some time more, but certainly we are, you know, as a community, is starting to begin the healing process.
And as a member of the media in that community, how have you been kind of weighing the best service that you can provide to a community that's hurting?
Well, so in the early hours, the first couple of days following the shootings, really the hunger and the best service that we could provide was reliable information, right? Everyone wanted to know what is going on, and so we reported as best we could what we knew for sure without getting ahead of ourselves as rumors fly. But very shortly after that, we set about to talk to loved ones, write profiles of the people who were lost, and try to understand them as people, and invite those who cared about them to share. That's of everything that we've done. That might be the thing that I'm proudest of, the way that we, but also just the community itself has memorialized, has honored those victims.
Well, and certainly not to turn to something totally light and frivolous, but of course life goes on. And Rob, I understand there's actually a pretty cool new exhibit that's coming to your neck of the woods that involves some prehistoric creatures and dinosaurs. What's that?
Yes, thank you, Judith. This is my 5-year-old son's top story of the week, maybe longer. The downtown mall in Wausau is getting this a dinosaur exhibit. It's going to open next month, and we wrote about this. And this is cool because, you know, dinosaurs. but the other thing, just an observation, Wausau Center Mall, like a lot of downtown malls or malls in smaller cities, has had struggles. There's, you know, retail outlets across the country are closing. Just in the past year, there's been a children's museum, sort of a play space open there, a museum exhibit of Hmong history, and now this dinosaur exhibit. Hmm. I don't know if it's going to stick, or I don't know if this is like a direction for the future, but as a way to deal with empty space in former retail spaces, it seems like a good trade to me.
So maybe we need to have your 5-year-old come on and give us a review next week.
Consider it done.
All right. Well, Rob, thanks so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
Rob Menser is a storytelling editor for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. He joins us just about every week at this time to recap the top state news stories of the week.